Both the garage and the cell is on the street. What is your garage in? What is your garage in? By day, the sun will not smite you, nor the moon at night. God will guard you from all evil. You'll preserve your soul. God will guard your going and coming from now and forever. A Psalm of David, God is my shepherd, I shall lack nothing. He makes me lie in lush pastures. He leads me beside tranquil waters. He restores my soul. He directs me to the path of righteousness for the sake of his name. Though I walk in the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff comfort me. You'll prepare a table for me in the full presence of my enemies. You'll anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. May only good and kindness pursue me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of God for the rest of days. Alan Bernardo. He likes to be called. Issue. As many of us call. Adam was born August 24th, 1954, the eldest son of Barney and Betty Bernardieu. He was first raised in Sweet Park of Eastern West Island. He graduated from Rainier Beach High School in 1972. We can't talk about Adam with facts, rather we talk about him, about his work. Often I don't talk about work in eulogies, but can't separate the man without talking about his work. He began selling before he was 10 in his father's carpet store and then to holding vegetables at Pine Street Market. He put himself through college by running a mattress store. Then he attended the University of Washington studying business and was a member of the Sigma Alpha Mu fraternity where he formed many lifelong friends. But many of you might not know, he never graduated the University of Washington. Just a few credits short, he decided he didn't need to, and he only learned everything he needed to do. In his 20s, he worked at Grand Trade, working with Harold Behar and Jim Kennington. Alan developed their national rental return program that revolutionized the industry. In his 30s, he started AD sales and marketing, which he ran to the very end, and was a representative extraordinaire, marketing to Costco from the day it opened for 31 years. Not only was he successful in his own business, but he made it possible for many others to thrive in their business worlds. His first companies were Ernest, Payback, Costco, and City Liquidators. I want to tell you one story I heard about Alan as a rep. Alan said that when he became a rep, he had to go out cold calling. And one day he went to a small chain corporate office, and he was sitting in the waiting room to see the president. And another rep was there, and he told him two things. This president never takes cold calls, he'll never take you without an appointment. And number two, he'll never give you an order on the first appointment. Alan took it as a challenge. And he decided he wasn't going to leave that office, so not only did he have an appointment, but he also had an order. And he waited, and he waited, and the day went by, and people started to leave, until the secretary left, and was virtually the last person in the room. And then the president steps out, and Alan comes to him and goes, I'm not leaving, so you sit down with me, and so I can talk to you about my proposal. And guess what? Alan left, and he had his first order. Alan's big turning point in the business world was when he practiced the Omega Institute method of self-improvement. This self-improvement was a driving force in all of Alan's business success. Alan got married to Kathy Pierce in 1985. They built AC sales and marketing together, and they enjoyed the fruits of their labor. They bought art, they loved traveling, and were involved in North philanthropy work. When they found out they couldn't have children, Kathy told Helen she wanted to adopt. Kathy wanted to adopt children who wouldn't struggle to be adopted. Helen did a little convincing at first, but it was so painful that he told him to do it. In 1919, they adopted their daughter Lily, followed in 1992 by adopting their son Gareth. Alan and Kathy wanted to adopt a fifth child, a boy from Colombia, but when they found out that Gareth had autism, they decided to put all their energy into Gareth alone. Alan made a point of always being there for his children, always giving them whatever he could. It is the best thing you have to do. Kathy, he was so grateful to you. I had told him to adopt. They are the love of his life. They gave Alan so much meaning. Those were some of the last things he told me. You gave him such love and life, such purpose. Alan raised the children with a strong Jewish pride, observing the holidays. Alan and Kathy remained committed to their children long after their marriage ended, and he was an uncommonly involved father and co-parent to the very end. Lily and Garth were blessed by having him as their father. They were all he thought about, his only priority. Alan and Kathy were so close that Alan became very close to Kathy's new husband, Doug, and they have been firm friends ever since. This was a real blessing because Garth couldn't have had just two parents. He needed three. In 2003, Alan began dating Susie Cohen. Immediately, Susie's family became Alan's family, and Alan's family became Susie's family. Alan had that way of acting. He took a keen interest in everyone and everything, and Susie's children became like his own. Susie and Alan were together for several years. After they broke up, they remained close friends, so much so that Alan became a brother to you and watched over your kids. It was a common place at the Jewish holidays that Alan would have Kathy and Kathy's family and Susie and all of Susie's family. It would be one blended, happy, extended family. Alan was an easy person to talk to. As he got older, he really learned how to listen. You could always talk to him in confidence. He was a man who was always trying to better himself. Alan had all kinds of friends from all walks of life. He loved making friends, striking up conversations. He had a wonderful sense of humor. Alan was also very meticulous. Everything had to be clean and organized. Everything had a place. Everything he took care of, his boat, his car, and he was always fixing things. Like his father Barney, was something which they lived in, to always be involved with fixing. Alan wasn't an outdoorsy kind of guy. We know he loved fishing, but he definitely didn't love camping. One story I heard was that he did go out camping one time, and it was in Portland. It was raining so badly, he had to call so they would pick him up. He never went camping again. And I think that's why he liked his boat, because he still could get some of the home comforts. His fishing stories were legendary. Little Alan and the Big Fish. He loved catching the fish, cooking them for the holidays. He really enjoyed going fishing with his friends. But how big was that fish? This big? 10 foot? Anyway. He loved the casino. Everyone knew Alan because he was larger than life. He found the casino very relaxing. And at the beginning, a lot of us know Alan as usual. I was touched to see many pictures of Alan on a lot of people's Facebook profiles. Now, I've known Alan these last for 3 years, and we've got to see each other, and obviously these last couple of months and the last couple of weeks more, but seeing my friends on Facebook and their relationships with Alan, you don't normally see that with so many people's profiles where they had, or on their status, they had a picture of Alan that was sometimes the fish dressed up in a black tie and a dinner jacket. You name it, you could see Alan in larger than life pictures. But those larger than life things, his personality, the biggest fish, the fastest cars, and of course those huge, massive stories that he loved to tell. Alan never gave up. He battled very long, until the end, he was there. And I have to tell you, I don't always get called to be there at the end, but I will share with you that his priorities were so important to him that his last wishes were, make sure my children are okay, make sure Kathy's okay, make sure Susie's okay, make sure that my beloved Barry is okay. Barry, he loved you so much. Those were his concerns. That's what was on his mind. Make sure everyone's all right. I love that. That was what he wanted to call me up. That's what he wanted to talk to me about. So, the consummate fisherman, the ultimate salesman, the devoted father, and always the center of the party. All our lives have been touched by this beautiful man. Alan has left his mark on the lives of his friends and family. Everyone whose life he touched will always miss him. They will always remember him because he was a person that we could never forget. There was only one Alan. I'd like to ask Duncan to come up.
I'm the new kid on the block, and I spent this first summer view very, very long time. I've known him since I married Kathy. You might say it's unconventional for the guy that married his ex-wife to be speaking at his funeral. But as Alan said many times, we don't do conventional. And I think you all would agree. He did everything conventional about it. I should have known something was afoot when Kathy and I got married. We got a bolt for the limo service and changed it to an antique Rolls Royce. Just for the class of it. And he's got it all along. He had a recurring thing. He kept saying, just go forward. Just go forward. But there's as the rabbi said, it took three parents. The lake's always been an amazing blessing, but there are hidden challenges. And for Gilbert, it's up here. It started on Valentine's Day 2006, and we'll end up Christmas Day 2006, or more carbon for help. And not bigger. And many, many times, one or two or all three of us were beyond our needs. Somehow we made it through. And it looks like two of the people that saved his life were able to thank you. But it took three parents. And when you go through that, you have a bond that doesn't have to be rational. And especially during hospitalizations, I did a lot of hospital work and stuff because I had a bad ankle. We're all meeting and intimidating with Alan's strength. And there was any number of times when I would do the psychology thing and he would browbeat people and that was exactly what Carl needed. More than once we said, well, what happens to kids that don't have someone to browbeat? We're doing the psychology thing. I don't want to think about that. But he didn't want to browbeat. He didn't want to shrink. He learned all of it. He eventually got out of it. And again, thanks to the people who saved his life. And he was a very, very dedicated father. And he always shared his home and his friends and his faith with everyone. And he was kind of the center of the party. Sometimes he wasn't the party, sometimes he was everything. If he was here, he would change the agenda three or four times in order to order a thing. And then we would all go to the casino with him. But yes, he knew how to fetch everybody. He knew how to make things happen. And before I forget it, I want to mention that he's right to look against every man. One of the last other thing is that Alan was asking me for the actuals. No, possible, I will call them right back. You know, you can't separate the man from his work. He had the same look on his face when he was selling and when he was fishing and when he wanted the slops. That was not the same look on his face. So thank you for the chance to talk to you about the part of him that I knew here may not be a long experience. I knew him as a whole father. Very unconventional, but like you said, we don't need conventional. And he told us he didn't want to die alone, but he wanted to be in his home with his family, and so we began to help him out. The part where we all together was very creative because of the illness. But indeed, for 10 days, every morning, when I would get up to go to work, he'd be up at my work smoking, and he would come in. We would talk and drink coffee. For those of you who know me realize that if he had coffee, he would have been. But I would drink coffee and we would talk for a half hour, 45 minutes, very quietly. And he said, you know, I've never done this before. And I said, well, he said, go to sleep at night, 11 in the morning, and have breakfast, and do my thing, have dinner with my family, and go to bed. And there was a very sweet, quiet part of him. He said, I've never done this before. Yeah, every morning, I'd get up and be smoking on the front porch, and have a night and coffee. Talk to me about absolutely nothing. We can work out many details of what kind of service we used to think about. I don't think I like that part. So I got to see it by heart, not a very important part, because I don't know if you're Alan had a new Mercedes, and asked her if she minded if he could just open it up.
Not knowing exactly what he meant, she said, sure, go ahead. My sister was green and so mad at Alan when they arrived in Lake Chelan. I asked her what was wrong, and she said Alan had taken the car up to 100 miles an hour on the winding North Cascade Highway. Needless to say, she was scared to death. My friend Alan was also a great storyteller. He always had a story. So my son remembers the story that Alan told us. Alan went to McDonald's or Burger King one night for dinner. He was sitting in his car in the dark eating, and he was on his phone. Of course, Alan was always on his phone. And took one bite of his french fries. All of a sudden, he told his friends he had to hang up. Something was wrong with the fries, and he had to take them back in. He had never taken the french fries with a terrible end of his life. So he marched with them up to the counter, handed the fries back to the person behind the counter, and says, there's something wrong with these fries. They taste horrible. And the person looks at them, and then looks at Alan and says to Alan, well, sir, it is a salt packet. Alan loved to see other people having a good time and provided us with many great times and memories. He was blessed to be on his boat many summer evenings relaxing after work, and spent many summer days with our kids on Lake Washington, towing them on water rafts until they were too exhausted to hold on anymore. He would take us on the 4th of July on the boat up to Roach Harbor, which was so much fun. In those summers, Alan provided our kids with some of their best childhood memories. Alan loved gambling and loved to go to Las Vegas. One year, he took our families all to Vegas. We stayed in a suite, ordered room service, went to shows, anything we wanted. He would stay up at night and go to the casino and play poker. The last night we were there, he was in and out of the room several times. Come to find out, he was on a large, great winning streak. The next morning before heading home, he was clearing out the safe. I was shocked at how much money was in there. I guess there's a limit to how much an individual can bring back out of Vegas, back home, or something, I'm not sure. So Alan gave me half his winnings to carry, which was $10,000, and he carried the other half. So Alan, my dear friend, also had to have something to complain about. Like he didn't have enough going on, but he needed some more drama. So he had a problem whenever he would eat chocolate at night. It would literally keep him up all night long. Throughout our friendship, countless times I would get the call in the morning. Oh, Susie, I feel like such crap today. As he moaned to me over the phone. Same story, and I knew it could only be one of two things. Either he ate chocolate or he was up all night with me. Alan, why are you feeling so bad this morning? Oh, I ate chocolate last night. I didn't even sleep till 3 or 4 in the morning. Why did you eat chocolate again, Alan? Well, you know what it'll do to you. Oh, because I'm stupid and I'll just never learn. So if we went out to dinner and he ordered something with chocolate, I would tell him, if you eat that chocolate, Alan, do not call me in the morning and complain about how bad it is. His last tactic to attempt to quit chocolate was if he ate chocolate, even a bite, he would have to pay whoever he was with $100. We had a final trip together last September when we all went to Greece together for Rosh Hashanah. We had a trip of a lifetime. Then in November, he was having problems one night, and this time he decided to go to Harbor View because he thought they would be able to figure out what was going on with him better than any other place. So they admitted him one night from the ER, but were so busy they did not have a private room for him. So he was put in a big room with at least 10 to 15 other men, which included criminals who had 24-hour police on duty at their bedside, and some of them were handcuffed to the bed. Alan had the last bed by a door that led to the outside. The restroom for all these guys is at the opposite end of the room. Well, one night, Alan woke up, one of the criminals, tiptoeing towards the door by his bed. Alan was there, he was looking for the bathroom, and said, "Hey, the bathroom's on the other side of the room, down there." All of a sudden, the cop, who had fallen asleep on his watch, jumped up and grabbed the guy before he was able to break out the door by Alan's bed. So Alan unknowingly busted the guy. It was at Harbor View that his family cancer had spread to his pancreas. The oncologist started him on another treatment to try and shrink the tumor, and Alan was getting increasingly tired, less energy, and spent more time at home napping and sleeping. Finally, Kathy and Doug and Lily moved in to take care of Alan. Things turned bad fast, and we spent his last days with him by his bedside, where I witnessed Kathy putting her heart and soul into making sure Alan was well taken care of and comfortable and never in pain, with Duncan by her side, giving her support throughout the entire process. All the beloved Alan, our beloved Alan. And here we are today, gathered here to say goodbye to a person who's touched so many of our lives in countless ways. I love you, Alan. You have made my life better. It filled my life and my family in so many ways. I cannot thank you enough. For your friendship, for your warmth, and including me in the circle of the ones you love. I will think about you and talk about you, and you will ever be a part of me. May you rest in peace in the garden with you.
All right, so I'm going to read a piece that my sister wrote. She wasn't able to be here today because she lives in New York. I don't remember a time in my life when Alan wasn't a part of it. My best memories as a child almost always include him. He was effortlessly fun, enthusiastic, and worked hard to make sure we were all having a good time. Be it the boat rides, the family trips, or barbecues in the backyard. In all my memories, he was always making the best of every single moment. He truly lit up every room with his positive spirit, and I never remember anything ever letting him get down. The love he showed for the ones he cared about knew no limits. His support and kindness was evident to me, even as a young child, as if it were a scientific fact. I truly believe that what he found most important in life were his relationships with his loved ones. When I returned home from a gap year in Israel and decided to observe Passover, we spent hours and hours one day trying to figure out how to make the kitchen kosher for me, how to kosher all the pots and pans. And so finally, he decided to take me to Costco to buy completely new pots and pans. And in order to make them kosher, he took me down to the lake to immerse them with me, which is something you have to do to make your new pots and utensils kosher. And even though we were there for so long and it took us his whole day, he didn't complain about the task once, like most of my family did. In my stress of trying to be a more religious Jew, he told me, with a very strong conviction, to just believe in God and everything will work out for you. The way he said it, as if he truly believed it himself, gave me so much comfort. And in times of hardship, I will always remember those words. The last time I saw Alan, about a month ago when I was home for Passover this year, he said to me, "You know, if you ever need anything, you can call me, right?" I said, "Of course I do." Confused as to why he'd been saying that to me, because he made it so obvious to me and to everyone else in my entire life that this was the case. Life will never be the same without Alan, and losing him will encourage me to make the most of every situation that life throws my way, and to always cherish the relationships I have with the ones I love. And on a more personal note, coming from me, I can really relate to this. I think that he didn't really cherish his relationships. And I'll never forget every time that we parted ways, if it was after dinner or after something that we did together, he would give me a hug, make direct eye contact with me, and tell me that I'm such a good kid and that he was always there.
Anybody into doing anything. So she didn't really take it off on the plane, but she came up to Bruce and I after the flight and told us she would have, but she would have lost her job. So, like I said, we fished all over the place. When we had no money, we fished in Puget Sound, we fished up to CQ. When we started to get a little money, then we extended ourselves into Canada and Alaska. So, we took dozens of fishing trips. Nishu really loved this band of Jewish fishermen. Nishu would get so amped up on these trips that oftentimes we would all be sleeping in the hotel and Nishu would sleep on his boat. He couldn't wait to get on the water in the morning. He loved fishing. He adored fishing with all the people that he loved. So Nishu had many, many stories, and we've all heard a lot of the stories, and I know Kathy and Duncan and the family have heard a lot of stories. In fact, there was a post that they had put a fish up on his chart at the hospital, and it said something like, Nishu said he caught a 10-foot halibut. Well, there was some truth to that. It was actually 9 feet, but it was easier. You know, we had to stretch it out a little bit. One story that Nishu loved to tell was a story where we were up at CQ. So as many of you know, CQ is a little fishing town up on the Washington coast on the other side of the straits from Vancouver Island. And we used to go up to CQ quite often, and we had some great trips up there. Johnny Calvo and Bobby G and Bobby B and Bruce and I and Mark Gresham and all the guys, we would just have some terrific times, and Nishu would bring his boat up there. So one night, Nishu says to Bruce and I, let's go out on my boat first thing in the morning and we'll go to that fishing spot that we caught some fish at the last time. So we leave in the pitch black. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning. We're not even close to sunrise. We go out on the boat. Nishu takes us to the spot. We fish for maybe 3 hours. We don't even get a nibble. All of a sudden, Nishu looks at Bruce and I and he says, hey guys, I got an idea. Well, Nishu has an idea. You know, trouble's coming. So he looks at us and he says, you know, we were in this big school of fish here yesterday. Obviously, they're gone. The next fish in school of fish must be coming from the north. Let's go find it. So we look at Nishu and go, well, Nishu, it's your boat, your gas. You're our captain. Let's go. I got to mention one thing here in the middle of the story about Nishu. As crazy as Nishu was, the guy was an incredible captain. He really was. He knew boats. He could moor a boat like nobody I ever saw before. He could be doing 19 things at once, and he could put that big bayliner of his in just about anywhere. He really, really was a good captain. So anyway, we take off like a bat out of hell north, and we're going, and we're going, we're going. We're going for about an hour, and all of a sudden, Bruce and I are like asleep on the boat already. Allison shoves the boat is practically reversed. You can hear the gears dragging. He goes, we're here. So we look around. Don't see any fish jumping. Don't see any bait in the water. Don't see any birds looking for bait in the water. There's nothing on the fish finder. We're going, okay. So I put my bait in the water, and sure enough, I'm not in the water more than 5 seconds. I got a fish on. And then Nishu and Bruce get their lines in the water. They get a fish on. And that was the beginning of the most unbelievable salmon fishing day ever for all of us in the state of Washington. It was incredible. The three of us limited out in about an hour, and then Nishu says, let's go back to the other guys, and we'll bring everybody out of my boat, because it was quite a run up north there, and there was not another boat in sight up there. We'll put all the other guys on the boat, and we'll come back again. So, We dump our fish, we pick up the guys, we go back up there, and there's like 8 guys on Allen's boat. And it's only really made to fish just like 3 guys. So we formed teams. This was typically easier. We formed teams, so we were doing like tag team fishing. So one guy, we'd have 3 guys in poles, and then as soon as they caught a fish, which wasn't too long, they would pop back and the next guys were going. And we ended up at the end of the day catching hundreds of pounds of fish. We go back to CQ, we go into our crappy little hotel rooms there at CQ, and we fillet out, and John Calvo brought his vacuum packer with him that day. We fillet out and vacuum pack like 200 pounds of fish. And Dee Dee and I are looking out the window all the time. We thought we were going to get arrested. We had exceeded our limit by a few, and we kept looking in the parking lot thinking that the game warden was going to show up. So anyway, that was just one of Dee's favorite stories, and I had to do him some justice in telling that story. We all love Dee Dee. We all have great stories about Dee Dee. Dee Dee made all of us laugh. Sometimes he made us cry. He was a one in a billion guy. And the guy that I was lucky enough to call a good friend. Whenever we'd see each other, Dee would always come up to me and throw his arms around me and he'd say, "Doug, he loves you, man." And I used to throw my arms around him and I'd say, "Dee, loves you, man." And we all love him. We're all gonna miss him really, really a lot. And thank you for your time.
Following completion of the service here, we'll be making our way to Safari Brothers Cemetery. It is located at 1230 North 167th Street. But after that, there will be a meal at Safari Creek Orphanage, which is 6552nd Avenue. Everyone, please rise for the people coming.